League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten. I'm still here, which means my baby is not. So instead, I'm stuck with two other people whose growth and development very precious to me. Sam Abasaki and Henry Hill. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Oh. I'm good. You know what? You know what's so funny? I genuinely thought you was going to say the baby's not here, so I'm joined by two other babies, and I was about to say that. But yeah, no, I'm all good. Just chilling. Enjoyed bank holiday weekend, man. First, the weather wasn't great, but sure. I enjoyed it nonetheless. You know, played sport, went to the gym, had a few drinks. So yeah, I had a good weekend, man.
Oh, it sounds nice. What about yours, Henry?
I also view you as a bit of a father figure, Pat, so that's nice, you know.
Cool.
Sort of.
This is really
love.
Emotional. Yeah. This is a really emotional start to podcast.
No, but my dad rarely shows any affection towards me, and I'm not sure he's actually that proud of me deep down. So that's kind of how my relationship is
with. Oh my god. So,
similar vibe with Pat. But yeah, I'm good. I've moved into a new place in Brixton, so I'm feeling good.
Oh, I love that.
We've
man.
Leveled up.
Love that.
We've decided we're no longer graduates, we're young professionals, and we finally found a place I think that suits that. It's a very clear distinction, but I mean, it's quite stressful actually, because it came unfurnished, and suddenly having to think, you think it's exciting, but then suddenly having to think about all these things is quite overwhelming. You know, I've spent 2 days looking at bed frames, and I think I'm losing my mind, so I'm quite happy to get back to just talking all things football actually.
You're adulting, isn't it? That's the part of the process. I'm not there yet, so I can't envy you, but it must feel good to, you know, have that a bit of control, you know, getting the sofas, the cupboards.
Oh, mate, it is actually.
The colour scheme.
I mean, listen, I'm here thinking I'm growing up because I'm getting a bed frame. Pat's here waiting to have a baby. So I think we're at different levels of our lives right now.
Yeah, though,
Pat, it's exciting to still have you. It's exciting to still have you around.
Well, it requires a lot more thought, I think, the bed frame than the baby. Like, the baby takes care of itself, you know. Like, there's not that much, like, consideration that goes into it.
Pat has proper taken this into your stride, though. I really love it. Like, I feel like you're made for this. Obviously, you know, there's some parents. I'm not going to get onto parents. This was about to go to a dark place. But you know, people that just take it. I feel like you've taken it in your stride. And every time we talk about it, it's, like, motivating. It's like, oh, I want to have a kid one day, you know.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I mean, like, you're making me sound a lot calmer than I feel. But, like, you know, we're getting there now. And now I'm kind of like, I want her to arrive. I want to, like, meet her, give her a name. We're just, you know, it's just like, it's a little bit like being at the airport. But yeah. Where the flight that you're about to take is quite scary. You know, like, you don't really know where you're going, and you feel like one of the wings might be hanging off. But so, you know, like, we're sitting around waiting for this thing to happen.
Yeah.
And we know that we can't be any more prepared than we are, but we know that it's that we don't feel prepared anyway. So it's just like, waiting for it to happen, waiting for it to happen. But
do you have a name in mind? Because I'm just gonna throw it out there. Samantha, beautiful name. beautiful.
Beautiful name. Samantha.
Just gonna throw it out there, you
know?
No,
he's put it to the Football Daily fans. They're voting in their thousands as to what it should be.
Comments below. In fact, there has to be something, you know. If a comment gets enough likes or something, you have to throw a name into the into the birth certificate.
How many likes would it have to get? Absolutely not. Like, like, I could see like Chris or Joe doing that, being like, if this gets 10,000 likes, I'll name my baby like Ruud van Nistelrooy or something. But like, you know what? If any, we have two names that we're between. And if somebody guesses one of them, I mean, I don't know how I'll see it because I haven't looked at the comments. I should look at the comments and see if anybody's guessed it. But if anybody guesses them, like either of them, I'll be pretty impressed.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna throw in a few guesses in the comments. I'm gonna throw in. I've got an idea.
You know? Oh, go on. Give me your idea then. Give me your idea. If you guys have got ideas, give me your ideas now, and then there'll be a prize if I remember for the person who's closest afterwards.
You okay. know what's so mad? The first name I thought, and this is definitely not it, but I just thought Patricia.
He's not gonna... Come on,
no, come on.
Patricia, he's not from the 1930s.
That's a really nice name.
This is not America, like where we name our children after ourselves. Like right. I'm gonna give her her own name.
Love that.
I think you're gonna go down like a French route. I think you like classic, but nouveau like classic that. Is what I'm thinking of you. So something like Genevieve, ooh. Something like that. That's the kind
I like
of name
that.
That I'm
one,
thinking.
One, I like that. A name that popped in, Angelina.
Angelina.
In what world has that got anything to do with what I've just said? Like,
I don't Angelina. Know. When you said French film, I just thought of Angelina Jolie. I don't know. I don't even know if I've seen her in a French film.
What? When I thought of French, I thought of somebody who is not French, doesn't speak French, as far as I'm aware, and does not. Well, okay. She has a French surname, I suppose. But
yeah, that's what I
Marion, Marion or Clara. Those are the two other. Suggestions appearing out there. Marion, after Marion Cotillard, who is actually a French actress, or Clara. Yes. Those are my two other guesses.
Clara. I you know what? I quite like Clara. A girl, one of the couples in my antenatal group, they just called their kid Clara, and I really like it. But
it's a nice name.
All right. So but, on the right but, there. You know,
those aren't bad guesses. I'm intrigued to hear your reasoning, because I think your reasoning is not bad, I'll say. It's not
about
bad.
Me?
Like, well,
I really want to get one, you know. Like, but I'm,
what,
I know I'm so, I'm no, not a baby. The name. I just feel like I'm way off now. I'm going in so many different directions. It's mad.
I really want to get a baby, you know.
Yeah, just think about a baby.
should we start talking about some football?
Yeah, that's probably enough dad chat for now. So, shall we talk instead about Inter Milan, because Inter Milan are champions of Italy as of this weekend, winning their first title in 11 years, ending a 9-year streak for Juventus of consecutive Scudetti, which, of course, Antonio Conte started. It sees them overtake AC Milan as the second most successful team in Italian history after Juve, with 19 titles. And they secured the title after Atalanta drew with Sassuolo on Sunday, which puts Inter 13 points clear, with not enough games left to make up the difference. Sam, I feel like we've talked about this title race several times this year.
Yep.
Were you surprised in the end? How do you feel about Antonio Conte having success again in Italy? What do you think is the scale of this achievement? Have we talked about it enough?
I think, I remember the last conversation we had about it, we all kind of said that Inter should win it.
Yeah.
And Conte's probably got the most pressure on him to win it, because he came into... you know, deliver titles and deliver trophies for Inter Milan, and they trusted in him. Like, they got him Lukaku, they got him a few other players that some other managers may have looked at and said, not really sure, you know, Ashley Young, Alexis Sanchez, Damian, so many players that wasn't as successful in the Premier League or even just in other places, even like Eriksen. Eriksen was on the fringes for a long time, and then now when they've caught form, he's one of the players that has been key to them being successful. So, yeah, man, I'm happy for Conte, because I actually really like him. Lukaku as well. I'm happy that he's won his first title now. So the goals, you know those type of players where it's hard to put them in the conversation of like the best strikers ever or at the time. Even like you know how I started at FD with the Harry Kane shout. You know, no trophies and him not being world class. Had to move on from that. But Lukaku's not one of them now. He's won a trophy. And yeah, he's been key for them. He might even be one of the best players in Serie A this year. He scored 21 goals. That's second in the league. He's got 10 assists. And he started 30 games. And he's been a revelation. And it's so funny, because I feel like Inter's form kind of... It didn't... I don't know if they got like a kickstart from that game that they had against AC Milan. You know when Ibra and Lukaku got into
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But their form from that game was so different to AC. I think AC won like 4 or 5 games since then, and Inter have gone on like mad streaks. They've won games in the last minute. You see Conte's passion on the side. Yeah, man, I'm happy for Inter Milan. They deserved it.
Well, Henry, obviously Sam's talked a bit about him there, but do you think that the difference maker was Lukaku? Who else in this Inter squad deserves some attention, do you think?
Well, obviously Lukaku has been brilliant. There's no denying that. I think I'm not sure he's got anything else to prove, certainly not to an English audience, but I think really the key is just the balance which they got throughout the whole side. I mean, I'm actually quite surprised at the start of the year when you saw all these players coming back. They're Kolarov, Young, filling the left-back spot. Perisic came back as well, and like you said, Sanchez, and it was a very bloated squad at some point. You know, there was Nainggolan. There's that funny image of Nainggolan and Vidal coming off the bench, both their Mohawks, and you sort of thought, God, I think Inter maybe bitten off a bit more, they could chew of all these players. But in fairness to Conte, he's really sort of boiled down that squad, and he's got a very cohesive unit. And yeah, Brozovic, I think, is brilliant. He's one of the most consistent centre mids the last few seasons across Europe, in my opinion. Then that back three of Skriniar, Bastoni and De Vrij, they're so important. They're such an excellent foundation by which this Inter team can grow off as well. And then I'm not on this kind of Lautaro Martinez 120 million euro hype. I'm not quite there yet with him, but I still think he's a perfect kind of double act to go with Lukaku, and they do complement each other very well. So I actually think the key to this Inter Milan squad has just been almost just the boring consistency of their squad. They're just, you know, their kind of starting 11, who picks itself now. I mean, Nicolò Barella, I think, is going to be one of the best players in the world. And we were saying, I think, Sam, we talked about the other day, I think he's going to be one of the stars of the Euros alongside Chiesa for the Italian national side there. And it's also, you know, it's great to see Christian Eriksen finally sort of kind of come in and do his bit there. But yeah, some clever additions with Hakimi. But it's obviously Lukaku, 21 goals, excellent. But for me, it's just the all-round squad and just the cohesiveness and the way they work together. And I think that's the most important part to the success of this Inter Milan side. Because they've scored a lot. 74 goals in Serie A is really impressive. Only lost twice all season. So they've been pretty on it. I think only Atalanta have scored more than them. And they're kind of all-out attack, aren't they? And they're sort of tied for goals with Napoli too. So yeah, they're a really good team.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, what you were saying about, it's interesting to talk about those peripheral players in the squad, because it does feel like Conte's done a great job of getting maximum value out of those people. So Alexis Sanchez, only 1,000 minutes in the league, but 11 goal involvements. Hakimi, yes, I think Hakimi has been sensational. He's kind of the best possible fit, really, for that right wing back slot with 13 goal involvements. Only Martinez and Lukaku have more in the squad. But then you look at Darmian, who's also played, obviously, as a wing-back for them this season, and he's got 5 goal involvements in very limited minutes. Oh. Well, to me, that suggests that it's also that, yeah, it is about the strength of the system and it is about balance as well as that individual quality. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I suppose the open question here, and obviously we don't want to go on about this too much because they've just won the title, they should be allowed to enjoy it, but of course we do have to talk about whether they'll be capable of challenging again next season. Now, financial issues mean that we may well see players sold. Obviously, Lukaku's been linked away, Martinez has been linked away, and particularly Hakimi could be on his way out of the door because I think everyone rightly acknowledges that he's one of their best assets. Henry, I'll come back to you on this. Do you think that they're going to be able to keep hold of these players? And if, for instance, Hakimi does go, do you think they'll be able to challenge again next season? Or do you think that this is going to be one of those brief, exciting moments where Inter were able to break Juve's stranglehold on Serie A, but are not necessarily capable of establishing a dynasty of their own?
No, I think this will go on for a little longer. I don't see a quick fix at Juventus anytime soon. I think they've got a lot more work to do in the transfer market. I mean, you can both correct me if I'm wrong. I think there's this big myth at the moment that Inter probably do have to sell players maybe to kind of balance the books a bit, but there aren't loads of buying clubs, if you know what I mean. There aren't loads of clubs that can come in and afford all of these players at the moment, really. I mean, you're looking at a few of the English sides, maybe Paris Saint-Germain, but the Spanish sides, and they're certainly not going to be doing much. And then you never quite know what Bayern Munich are going to sort of churn up there. So I at best best they might lose one or two players. I certainly think it would take a lot to drag Lukaku away at this point. I think he's enjoying his time at Inter Milan, which I think is as important as much as anything. Obviously, Hakimi is the quite interesting one amongst the pack there, but I don't see many clubs coming in with the kind of money to rip away a lot of these players. And I think it may just be a case that they try Inter try and sell a few of their fringe players where they can recoup their losses and try and balance the books that way, rather than have to sort of export out all of their big hitters. I just don't think that the market's going to be there for a lot of huge transfers, and that's what it would take for a lot of these deals to go through. I mean, Barella, I've heard quoted like £54 million for him. I think they're trying to offer him a new deal at the moment. Be very surprised if anyone goes in for him. Maybe Man City might surprise some of us and come in for someone like Hakimi, but I really think that they do have enough quality within that squad to maintain a few losses and also build on for next season too. So yeah, I'm not too worried about it. I've also read that Watford might come in for Ashley Young, so there's a bit of cash off the bat. I'm not that concerned. I think Inter Milan, if anything, next year will be looking to get out of the Champions League group stage and go deep into European competition. I think that is their bigger priority over worrying about whether or not this is a flash in the pan moment, which it might be more of the case for one of the next teams that we'll talk on later on.
What about you, Sam? What do you think that Inter's prospects are next season? Do you agree with Henry that, like, kind of the next step is going to be Conte breaking? I suppose that record we always talk about of disappointment, underperformance in Europe.
That's the thing. Like, I don't really know if this, like, obviously winning a title is a good thing because they haven't won in so many years. Conte's basically brought them back to their glory days. But at the same time, yeah, I feel like them winning this title at this stage, knowing the type of manager Conte is, and even when Henry's saying that he doesn't know if the Juve squad can rejuvenate themselves as much as they need to compete with Inter next year, I don't know if that's the case. Like, if they do sell Ronaldo and they do make the Champions League spots, that's gonna leave a lot on their wage bill that they can actually improve their squad.
Who are they gonna sell Ronaldo to? Who's gonna buy Ronaldo this summer?
He'll go somewhere. PSG, United, he can go somewhere. Like, if they say that we want to get your wages off of our records, and we just want a new start, because there's a lot of every time I look at the newspapers from Italy and from like the Juventus side of things, there's always someone, an ex-pro or an ex-legend at Juve, saying something bad about Ronaldo. And I think this year it's not really been down to him alone, because he's still scoring goals and all of that stuff. But at the same time, it's like the Ronaldo project hasn't worked. Like, they were supposed to challenge for the Champions League. That's what he was brought in to do, and they haven't even made a semi-final. So at this point, do they?
It's not like a criticism of Ronaldo as such. It's just like, do you trust the people in charge of Juventus to make the right decisions to bring that club back to where it's meant to be? Because if you look at every other transfer is just a complete disaster for them at the moment. Alvaro, you say, like, it's all well and good trying to go get a striker. I think they have an agreement to potentially buy Alvaro Morata for like another €40 million. I'm not sure whether that will even happen. Yes, Chiesa's gone well, McKennie's gone well too, but then you look at Artur, kind of head scratcher there, and then even sort of the Aaron Ramsey deal and like Rabiot, the centre mids. My question about Juventus, and I do think it'd be interesting to see whether or not Ronaldo, I think Ronaldo is still amazing, but whether or not they could find a buyer, so be it. Even if they did find a buyer, like, I don't trust the people in charge of Juventus to then get the correct players in to push this project forward, because they've having gone from being a club which are excellent at kind of finding free agents, bringing them on and pushing them on, elevating these players, they've suddenly kind of gone the other way and they've decided to splash some cash here and there, and it hasn't worked at all in some of these situations. So yeah, my opinion is that Inter Milan seems to be sort of better organised at the moment than a club like Juventus, who've got some gaping holes.
You can say that Inter Milan are better organised, but I wouldn't say that the Inter squad is clear of Juve right now. I just say, like you said, Conte's been able to get all of his players working in the system that he does so well, and all of them are buying into it. All of the wing backs are doing well, the strikers, the midfielders. But at the same time, can they do that next season when they're in the Champions League? They've won the title now, so they're obviously going to want to achieve more. They crashed out of European competition at the beginning of the season, so literally the title was the main thing that they have to focus on. So I don't know, man. I definitely don't see them going into next season with all of these stars, because I just don't see it happening.
Just looking at Juve's squad, their regular starting 11, they're still relying on Bonucci and Chiellini at the back. Great players, obviously. They're still relying there. I mean, De Ligt hasn't quite been the money they paid hasn't quite been the player. Juan Cuadrado, excellent, but he's no spring chicken. Even like Szczesny in goal, he's not a world-class goalie. He's a very good goalie.
The thing is, though, like I agree with some of the issues with the squad. I agree that they've probably failed to refresh the back line in particular as well as they should have. But we've also just talked about Ashley Young and Darmian being useful for Conte's. Fundamentally, I think if Conte was in charge of Juventus this season, I think Juventus might have won the title.
I think that's what I'm saying.
A top five manager in the world. That to me, it's as simple as that, almost.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think he will be able to, like. We've seen Conte. He's been successful this season. But we also know that sometimes it doesn't always end as well as it starts. Like at Chelsea, obviously he didn't get backed by the board, but the second season that he had at Chelsea was not great. Like, you know what I mean? So he went to Inter now. First season wasn't great, underachieved. This season they've achieved what he came in for. But now next season, he's got a lot of aging players. A lot of their side are over 30. So they're going to have to reinvest. They're going to have to reinvent their side as well. So I don't know if they've got the funds to be able to do that with the players that they've got now, because these players are probably going to want more after achieving such a historic thing for their club as well. So I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting for Inter next season. I genuinely don't think they'll be able to keep the likes of Hakimi, Lukaku, Martin, all of them together. If they do, then fair enough, innit? But I just don't see it happening.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So let's move on to another title race now that the Italian one is settled. And over in France, there is a true underdog competing with almost the hereditary champions of France at this point. Lille are a point ahead of PSG going into the last three games of the season. It really would be an unexpected title for them. They beat Nice 2-0 this weekend. Sam, this seems... Lille have been a good side for the last few years, but this title challenge seems almost to have come out of nowhere. What is it about Lille that you think has helped them to the summit of the table this season?
They're just... I feel like they've fully harboured the underdog story, like, of just grit and hard work, and that mainly comes from their defence. Like, they've only lost three games this season. PSG have lost eight, and they've conceded only 22 goals in 35 games. That's the best defence in Europe's top five leagues. Like, and every time they've come up against PSG, PSG don't have the answers. They lost to them 1-0 and they drew 0-0 in the other fixture. So I think they've just got a belief in their side. They've only allowed 11 open play goals all year. The next best is PSG with 20. I think that their defence has really, like, shone this season. And it's one of those things where, you know, when you're going through those hard-earned games, like the 1-0 that they had against PSG, their last game that they played, it's like, you're going through that game, they're throwing everything that they have at you, and obviously PSG are the best team in the league. If PSG are throwing everything at you and they can't score in two fixtures, then you can beat anyone. And I think they've just got the mindset that this can actually be our year that we dethrone them. And I love it, man. I love an underdog story. Like, they're fully going for it. So yeah, I think I hope that they can see it out. It's very tight, but they've got the players in their squad that Henry's gonna talk about that actually that are leading them on this charge.
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting how good that defence has been. Obviously, after selling Gabriel to Arsenal last summer, it was expected that maybe there would be a slight transitional period, and actually it's been better than ever. But Henry, it's not just about them being good this season, right? It's also about the league presenting them with an opportunity to win, because if PSG are totally at the races, even this Lille side would probably have struggled to compete, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of kind of factors that went in. Obviously, so Ligue 1 and Ligue 2, they reckon collectively the clubs will lose 1.3 billion euros because of everything that's happened with this. And PSG absorb the monster kind of part of that. And you can see that in their summer transfer activity last year. They made it clear during that time. There's a good if he explained on this about how PSG lost losing their grip on Ligue 1, which I encourage people to go and look at. But basically, they really weren't able to strengthen and kick on from that side. They obviously made that Icardi transfer permanent for about 50 million euros. Then the rest of the signings, sort of bit part players. Danilo Pereira, a central defensive midfielder in from Porto. Alessandro Florenzi, which I think we could all agree isn't really a world-class right-back. And obviously Moise Kean, who's been a good player, don't get me wrong. But on the flip side of that is they lost players like Thomas Meunier, Edinson Cavani, and even sort of morale losses in people like Tanguy Nianzou. But basically, PSG played a lot of football last year towards the end of the season with the Champions League, rolled on through. There were issues going on behind the scenes with Tuchel, and then obviously that culminating in a managerial change, and they weren't really able to strengthen on and push on with their team. Meanwhile, like we said, Lille did brilliantly. They, yes, they lost Gabriel, and yes, they lost Victor Osimhen, but they replaced them pretty effectively across the board. You've got players like Jonathan David who've come in, and he's really began to show the kind of talent there. That's 27 million euros, most expensive signing out of the Belgian Pro League, I believe, at the time. Sven Botman, as we said, an upgrade probably on Gabriel. 8 million euros there. I think it looks like he'll probably like times five that number when he goes on to leave. And then players like Burak Yilmaz, unbelievable free transfers. These little gems that they've discovered in the market. 13 goals this season. I think he scored something like 8 in his last 8 games. He's on an absolute roll. He scored the first goal at the weekend. He just looks like he can't miss at the moment.
And he's 35 and, years old.
Yeah, it's mental. It's actually mental. He used to tear it up in the Turkish league. They love him over there. And he's come over here and he's done a brilliant job. But yeah, it's just one of those situations really with Lille where just the right pieces of the puzzle have all started to fall together this one season. They've got a core of the squad who are really experienced. José Font at the back, 37 years old. Benjamin André, who you heard us rattling on about on Continental Club. He's one of the most hard-working central midfielders you'll find. Like we said, Yilmaz up top doing the business there. And then around that, they've got this young core of players that have really come on and pushed on. Someone like Jonathan Bamba, who was almost non-existent last year, has stepped up his game. So, and I mean, look, the thing is, Lille are a loss-making club. And they will need to sell, and they will need to probably accept lower fees for some of their players, and I think that'll be quite an interesting option. So it will be difficult for them to maintain this. It already looks like Mike Maignan, their excellent keeper, he might be going elsewhere this summer. But the point is, Lille, PSG's decline coupled with the various kind of worries about finances going on in Ligue 1, and then their kind of smart investments and clever management has culminated in a season where they can really push on for the title, and it's now just a matter of will and desire. And this is what we saw when Montpellier won the title, when we saw when Monaco won the title. They've got the wind in their sails and they're really going for it, and I think that's good enough to almost see them over the line at the moment.
I mean, it is interesting though to be talking about like kind of this perfect storm of occurrence though that's allowed them to push for the title, given that they've, of course, had their own difficulties this season. You know, this is a club, like you say, that have lost so much money that they actually had to be sold in the autumn. Mm. And the guy who we've considered one of the difference makers for them over the last few years, who's director of football, Luis Campos, resigned during that period as well. So it will be interesting to see how they will turn over the club. Again, if, for example, as you hinted at, Mike Maignan ends up going to AC Milan to replace Donnarumma, or Sven Botman does move on, or Renato Sanchez, who's been linked with various places, including Liverpool, were to make a move. But going into the last few weeks of the season, it does look incredibly doable, doesn't it, Sam? I mean, their next three games, they've got Lens away, they're fifth in Ligue 1 at the moment. Then they've got Saint-Etienne at home, who are 12th. Then they've got Angers away, who are 13th. Do you think they're going to do it, Sam?
I think they can, man. I think this is crunch time. This is crunch time for them. But
that is like, a fake answer. Yeah. That is a fake answer.
No, I honestly,
Do you think they'll do it? I think they can.
Listen. I actually like PSG a lot, yeah. But this season, in Ligue 1 anyway, I feel like PSG have just not been performing. All the games that I've seen of them, they just don't look the same. Even to their side compared to them in the Champions League, it's just so different. They've got a different hunger when they're playing the Champions League, which is fair enough because it's a trophy that they have missed out on so many years and they want to win it. But this year, it's just something's different, man. Something's in the air in France, man. Lille have got their tails up. Like they're hungry for it. And the three games that they've got, if they beat Lens away and then they go into that Saint Etienne game at home and can claw out a win, I don't see them not doing it. I do think PSG can lose another game as well, or just draw another game. They've just not been on it. So yeah, man, I'm for Lille. I'm for Lille.
Just to give you some context there. PSG play Rennes in the league next, and then they got Reims, Stade de Reims, and then they play away to Brest in their final game. So that Rennes game, like you said, they have the capacity to certainly blunder, throw away a lead, draw. Although, I mean, to be fair, majority of the second half of the season has just been a staggering amount of wins with the odd losses. There's been hardly any draws there. They've only drawn with Barcelona that I can see since almost the turn of the year, in fact. So yeah, they've got plenty. It's not quite been as difficult as perhaps let on, but I certainly think Rennes could take it to them, because I think for a club like Rennes, they'd probably rather see Lille.
Definitely. I think every team in Ligue 1 would rather see another winner than PSG. They might, you know, you might even see some players, you know, just letting certain little man through in those last few fixtures. Yeah, like, you know what? you could have this one.
I mean, part I think of what's made for such chaos in the French league this season has been just like incredible numbers of red cards. It just seems like with fans out of the stadium for whatever reason, like players have somehow been more aggressive. Whereas normally we imagine the fans kind of like whipping them on. But I think the Monaco Lyon game the other day, what was that? Five red cards that saw. You know, Neymar's been sent off twice this season. Abdou Diallo has been sent off twice for PSG. Like there are red cards flying around all over the place. And that's the thing, you know, PSG can be the better side than Brest or Rennes or Reims or whoever it is. But if they get a silly red card, which they absolutely have in them, then you can easily throw a result away and that might be enough.
I mean, the PSG's defence at the moment, you never quite know which team they're going to put out. They've got so many injuries and they're very tired. Mbappe looks like he's going to be basically patched up and sent out into this Champions League campaign, which could be quite bad for like France, certainly, in the summer. So you never quite know what players are available for PSG, you know, what levels of fitness they're operating at there. So that's another thing that seems to work in Lille's favour, who do just have a fresh set of legs and just brilliant squad. Yazici, Luis Araujo is another player who I really like, winger who plays there. So yeah, I mean, personally, I think Christophe Galtier, a big fan of him as a manager. I really hope that they can push on and do it. Because if not, I can't see the difference of Inter Milan. Lille, in certain ways, have to hit the reset button this summer if everything is to be believed. So yeah, I really hope they can.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So for our last section today, we thought that we would talk about the biggest game of the weekend that didn't happen, which of course was Man United's home fixture against Liverpool. Ended up being postponed after fans broke into Old Trafford, decided to have a little kickabout on the pitch, obviously breaching COVID rules. For the most part, it seemed like a peaceful demonstration, though we have since heard reports that six police were injured, some of them quite nastily. This action was really aimed at the Glazers. The intention here was to show the dissatisfaction of the fans with a regime which has taken endless money out of the club since they took over between the years of 2003 and 2005. And it seems as well like though the Super League precipitated this, this has been bubbling for a while. Sam, what did you think of the scenes we saw over the weekend? Do you think that this is the way to get at clubs, by hitting them where it hurts, which is in their wallet, I suppose?
Yeah, no, I think that that's realistically, that's the only way that these owners and these clubs can get affected, when their pockets are like heavily affected. And that's probably, that would have been the biggest game. This is probably the biggest game in for a long time. Like, everyone was looking forward to it. And for that to happen, no, like, when I saw the videos, I was like, is this some sort of joke? Because I haven't been on, I wasn't on social media for the weekend yet. So when I saw that, I was like, no. And then I saw one of the players, he got a ball from the side, dashed it in the sky and did a bicycle kick, and all of them started celebrating. And I was like, what's really going on here, guys? Are you protesting or are you just trying to enjoy playing on Old Trafford? But to be fair, I do hear them. Like, I do hear the fans' frustration at the United fans. I think since the Glazers have taken over, I wouldn't say that they've gone backwards, but I'd say that they haven't progressed at the pace that you would have thought that they would have as the biggest club in the world, as one of the biggest clubs in the world. Like, teams like City, teams like Liverpool are getting new facilities, new areas in their stadium, and Old Trafford and even Carrington. I heard one of the United fans complaining the fact that it's so old-fashioned, like there's not been any developments on these places, and it's like, you're clearly not showing that you care about the fans. There's been fans hating from early, to be honest, but I think things like the ESL, and then the lack of improvement with Old Trafford, the squad, the money that they're spending, and then they're not seeing the results. And it's just like, fans are going to get frustrated. I think them going to that extent and harming some police officers and people that are trying to just keep them safe, I think that that's wrong. I always think that people always take it too far with these type of things. And it's like, we get your message, but at the end of the day, you have to realise, if you want certain things to be done, like, just use your voice. Like, I hear some of them might have been waived or whatever, but at the same time, it can ruin the whole message. And I think with some of the scenes that I saw, I was just like, oh yeah, you're just taking it too far now. And it's just taking it away from what it actually is fans caring for their club and wanting their club to just to feel more part of it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think the bad eggs just, they've ruined the message a little bit. But yeah, man, I get their frustration. I get United fans' frustration.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I see the frustration as well, but it also annoys me a little bit, because I think that there's this idea in football that all that matters is the football, which I think is ridiculous. So you see Man United fans complaining and saying their owners are terrible. And you say, well, which owners would you like? Like, which billionaires are good? Which owners at the top level are actually good owners? Because in my view, there aren't any. There are no good owners at the top level. And you see Man United fans who are sad, essentially, that they don't have an Abramovich or a Mansour, like sugar daddy, who is essentially pumping what certainly looks like dirty money into the club. Like, to me, that is not a good owner. Like, there's no such thing as a good billionaire. I think, like, these people are not, like, pumping this money in, like, out of the goodness of their heart. Like, the UAE pumps money into Man City to help themselves look better on the international stage. Like, it's I just don't really understand this idea. It's in the same way that there were Newcastle fans, you know, saying that they wanted the Saudis to take over the club because Mike Ashley's such a terrible guy. And I thought, well, okay, like, but if we're going to talk about who's a terrible guy here, are we really going to like beckon in the Saudi royal family and say that that these people are better than Mike Ashley? Of course they're not. But I think the stadium is a reasonable point. And similarly, I think that the women's football is a real issue as well. You know, Man United had a women's team when the Glazers took over. They disbanded it to save a tiny portion of money. At the time, it cost less to run the women's team for a year than it cost to pay Wayne Rooney's wage back then as a teenager for a week. And they were the last Premier League club to have a women's team when it restarted in 2018. That, to me, is a significant issue. But overall, Henry, I mean, we've heard these rumours of like how much money they've taken out of the club, but it doesn't seem to have hurt Man United's ability to spend.
I mean, one of the things that people used to get annoyed at Sir Alex Ferguson about was that he kept saying, they have been supporting me. They have been buying the players I want. I think, is it the owner's fault that some of their transfers haven't worked out in the last sort of post-Ferguson era? I don't know. I think the Glazers have quite clearly been putting money up for transfers. You just have to look at like Harry Maguire, Bruno Fernandes. I don't think it's a case that's been neglected. I think a lot of... I'm going to be careful what I say here, but I think a lot of fans are just jealous of other clubs getting it right. You know, one thing you can say what you want about the owners of Manchester City, but 8 out of 10 of their transfers seem to work out perfectly, don't they? They seem to have got a knack of finding the right... And they've never busted the bank significantly to buy any... They've never played at stupid fees.
Is that down to more care from the owners, though? Like, taking more of an interest into what the club is doing?
Well, this is what I was going to ask. Like, given I agree with Sam there. Like, I think given what you've said, we could say then that the failure of the Glazers is not to put money up, but it's a failure to put the right people in charge of the club, right?
I think that... So, Edward... They had a long relationship with Ed Woodward, don't they? He used to run investments for them. He was basically just like a mate, almost like a good family friend, which they've elevated through the process because they trust him. Does that make him the right man for the job? No, it doesn't. I mean, he apparently very good at marketing, a very good businessman, but is he a football man? Probably not. And I think that is the kind of... That is the... Manchester United, in a nutshell, by virtue of taking out as much debt as they did to buy the company, to buy Manchester United, they had to run it as a successful business. They had to start taking money out in order to pay back interest and stuff like that. I think it's half the kind of 700 million or so, whatever it used to be now. Maybe, Pat, you have the numbers there. So I think on that basis, they probably have made Manchester United this very marketable club. And people are looking at it and going, well, how isn't that translating into success on the pitch? And that's the other side of the flip coin, is they probably don't have the correct football people in charge of the club. I wholeheartedly agree with Sam's correction of me there. Getting someone like Ed Woodward in, who's clearly out of his depth in this kind of world. And sometimes you do need someone like hard-nosed people that know about football. You just have to look at Germany to an extent. Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. A lot of the guys who are involved at boardroom level are ex-footballers, turned businessmen and stuff like that. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge was part of the Bayern Munich squad as a player. And they sort of managed to marry that knowledge of business and football to keep the kind of identity and fans' hearts in place. So I think... Hopefully, if the Glazers have any sensibility, that's the kind of next step. But actually, I think the setup that they've tried to install now should hopefully do that with like people like Darren Fletcher. But yeah, it looks like it's probably too far gone in the eyes of the United fans. But yeah, I don't think anything that's happened condones some of the violent scenes that we saw at all. I think you have to take back, and that is just defeating the message. You can't be dirtier than the thing you're trying to act against.
Do you guys... That's 100%. But do you guys actually think, yeah? Because this is one thing with me. I hear protesting, and I think that it's definitely key in like this day and age, where a lot of things come from when fans and people come together and they speak out. Like, let's say when a lot of the football teams did the blackout and stuff like that. Yeah, but with that type of protest, with where the owners aren't necessarily around, like I feel like. Someone like Ed Woodward, he felt it firsthand, like, because the fans could literally turn up outside his yard and say, bro, we want you out. You know, if you don't get out, then there's a big problem. But with the Glazers and even with the Arsenal fans, when they were saying Kroenke out, they're not even around. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know how much it affects them. And that's the only thing, because you rarely ever hear them speak out about these things, or saying, oh, we hear your frustration and we're going to try and do this to do that and make it better. They just... carry on. So I don't know, do you guys think that this is something that the fans are going to continuously have to do for something to happen, or do you think the Glazers are going to be like, you know what, the fans hate us, so we're going to have to cut out?
I think that it was always part of the Glazers' idea that they would eventually sell. I don't know when exactly that will be, but you know, they didn't put... I think it cost them about 800 million to buy the club altogether, and a lot of that wasn't their money. It was a leveraged buyout against the club's assets. So when they do eventually sell up, you know, rumours are now they want 4 billion for the club. Now, I don't think they're going to get that, but they've paid themselves a bunch of dividends out of the club. When they eventually sell it, they'll make a huge windfall, and it might just get to the point that it's unsustainable. It may also have been the case that they thought, you know what, we will keep hold of the club because we think the Super League's going to happen and that will be a load of money for us. Now that that looks like it isn't happening, at least in the near future, they might think, well, actually, we can sell because it is a bit troubling. But I do think in order to push them in that direction, as you were saying at the beginning, it's going to have to be something that affects their bottom line. You know, like it's going to, because I agree, they're so far away that they don't really care. Like if fans are complaining, I mean, Kroenke, for example, you know, relocated the club. Well, relocated a club that was relocated, but took the, but took them from Missouri back to Los Angeles with the Rams. So like he obviously is pretty resilient when it comes to hearing criticism from the fans. What he won't be resilient about is if he sees his investment being compromised by fan action. So I think that the action absolutely has to revolve around trying to decrease the club's profitability rather than just making a stink on the news. Like, I understand the desire to do that, but I think what was successful about this protest is the fact that it forced one of Man United's biggest home fixtures of the year not to go ahead. And if they do that, and if people start cancelling their season tickets and stuff, then I think people will have to sit up and pay attention.
Yeah, I think that's where the big change is going to come. Like when the fans are allowed back into the stadiums, like are we really? Is everyone going to follow through? Like and say, you know what, we're not going to go to this match. Like even though the stadiums are open, we're not going to go to this match. Not one of them ones where you come into the stadium and then you still got the banners. It's like you've kind of already just paid them to like put the banners up, so it's like, is you're contradicting yourself. So they got to fully follow through and say, you know what, we've got a little bit of momentum here. We've stopped a game. They're gonna let the fans back in. This is another opportunity for us to say we're not gonna put money into your pocket if you're not gonna make us feel like we're part of the club. And yeah, man, it'll be interesting to see what happens next.
So I think that's a pretty good whistle-stop tour of European football for this week. Who knows if I will be here next week, but thank you very much to my guests, Sam and Henry, for joining me today. Guys, before we go, Henry, I'll come to you first. Do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Oof, no, I think we've fully passed on from any European Super League content now, so back to the normal stuff. I think we've got a lot of our listicles and a bit of reviews of the seasons and stuff like that. I think you've done a script about the loan system, Pat, which is could be coming out soon. So that's a really interesting look at how the loan system is going to change things. So yeah, keep checking out our explained videos, as I think, you know, we put a lot of effort into those, and hopefully you all enjoy them.
What about you, Sam? Anything to plug?
First of all, I was going to say, I've thought of another name, Eleanor.
No, that's my wife's sister's name, so I don't think we're going to reuse that.
But it's in the family, so I'm in and around. I've got the right energy. I'm actually, when this video comes out, I'm going to, in the comments, every day until the baby's here, a name. You guys need to make sure you do that, because we need to get at least one of the names right. But yeah, what was I going to say? What am I plugging? Snapchat. Subscribe to the Snapchat. We put stories out there every single day. We even covered the Glazers, the 4 billion that they're trying to get. Little personal plug, you know, my YouTube, Samo, subscribe to that. Some content there. Don't Henry, you're a big fan and I love you for that, but don't do that. You know,
that's good. I'm just jealous. I don't know why I haven't been asked on. I feel like I'm perfect. It's coming.
It's coming. Don't worry. Yeah. It's coming. I'm gonna get you and Pat on the footy agenda.
You should do.
But yeah, that's it for me, to be honest.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, guys, and thank you to you at home for listening or watching. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcast app or at Football Daily Podcast on YouTube. And we hope to see you next time when I may or may not be here. Until then, goodbye. Bye.
Peace. Bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.